Well, they are an interesting looking group, aren't they?
They have one called Me and God Don't Need a Middleman. It's actually talking about preachers. They're PG. They're clean. I mean, they're they're not like some of the ones. They're not Ray Wiley.
So, no.
You can listen to it around other people.
Now, is it three of them?
But yeah, Seth and Scott Avett are the brothers. And then Bob Crawford's the bassist. And then they have another person in the band. I think his sister plays with them sometimes on like violin and fiddle and stand-up bass and things like that.
I give them violin and fiddle, are they bluegrass?
They don't. I don't know how to call them a genre.
All
I
really right.
Don't.
Well, I'm looking forward to this.
I mean, they are one of the hardest.
Look at that, man. You play.
Well, if you listen to them from when I first started listening, when they were playing dive bars and stuff like
right,
up till now, where they're working with big producers and their songs are on TV and stuff, it's been an evolution.
They're on TV and stuff.
There's some out there. I mean, I've heard their songs as like music background in shows and movies and things like that.
I'm surprised. My wife teaches a course called Body Balance, and they have all kinds of new music, and that would be some of the music they would use. And I wonder if they've been on some of those songs. I just didn't know who they were.
And if Nate likes Ray Wiley, I think this might be one. If he's not heard of them, he might be interested in this one too.
Right.
These guys are pretty. They're kind of out of that same cloth. Now that cloth is a really big cloth. It's got a lot of things. But it's a little bit of rock. It's a little country. It's a little bit of I don't know what it is, but that's cool. And there's a little bit of I don't know what that is, and I don't like it. But it's they're creative. So
I'm texting him right now. And I asked him if he's ever heard of the Avett Brothers. You know, he does that TV radio show, and he plays all kinds of music from all, you know, people I've never heard before. And so I'm wondering if he's ever played them.
I wouldn't be 100% surprised if he hasn't, but I would. I think he might have, but, they're big enough he might have. But you have to let me know what he says when he's back. Kind of get into the welcome to the 167 or other 167. I don't even remember the name of it. I just say Garrett McVean sometimes. The other 167.
The other 167.
So welcome back. We're kind of in a battle of who's going to have to talk today because my voice isn't great. Ben's isn't great. Ben's been under the weather.
I will go ahead and apologize for the sound of this voice today. Sorry.
Well, it will. I'll carry it as much as I can, but I don't really want to hear me talk much more. I figured out the ulterior motive that God has for me doing podcasting. It wasn't actually because I'm good at running my mouth. It was because he wanted me to stop running my mouth so much. Because after you listen to yourself on loop for about 5-6 hours.
You ain't kidding. One time.
I've got to the point where I don't even want to speak anyway. But I'll tell you the coolest thing about it. When I go back and listen to it, whether it's our show or the ones I'm doing for work, when I'm talking, I'm on guard with the edit button.
Right.
And then when the other person's talking, I lay back and let them say what they need to say. Because usually in the work setting, they're the one that's really, they're the one I'm trying to spotlight. And truth be told, that's kind of, I thought you were the star of this show too.
Yeah. It's kind of, no, I wanted you. Brother.
But the cool thing about that is I've realized is like, you know what? The more I talk, the more I have to edit. Best thing I can do is kind of sit back and shut up. Then I can save some time.
That's right.
And then I started thinking about, does that apply in my real life too? If there was an edit button on life, how much could I save by not saying anything in a lot of situations? So I'm trying that. I'm trying to talk less.
Well, the scripture says, be quick to hear, slow to speak. Jesus tells us that we're going to give an account for every idle word. So I sometimes hear that and I just get a little nervous because the last thing I want to do is give an account for every idle word because I'm just like you. I tend to say a whole lot more than I need to.
Well, it's funny. Someone told me at work a while back, when you get ready to send an email, go back through and read through it and just see, does this have to be here? It doesn't have to be here, leave it out. And I'll tell you another one that I'm really bad about, just in, and this isn't necessarily faith, but it's just communication, I guess, but I think it's tied to faith. It's when I am, ADD came quick here, when I'm talking to someone, I'm really bad to go ahead and answer the questions they haven't asked yet. Like I'll answer a question and then I'll know they're going to answer and I'll go ahead and answer four or five. If you'll wait for them to ask it, sometimes they don't. And sometimes you don't make a fool of yourself by trying to say stuff they were going to say. So silence is maybe a cool little trick I'm trying to exercise.
There's nothing wrong
more.
With silence every now and then.
But I'll tell you where it's come from, honestly, is from trying to do a little bit of a deeper dive on Jesus, the person. I think as I said last week, I think there's a business opportunity if you can learn how to act like Jesus in financial services. Well, What does that mean, acting like Jesus? There's a difference in talking about Jesus and acting like Jesus.
Sure.
And I think if there's been a phrase that's been in my head this week where spiritual battle might have been it last week,
yeah.
This week it's kind of been walk the walk.
Right.
As a, but not just in that sense. Walk the walk as opposed to talking the talk.
Like yeah.
It's easy to... Well, I'll say this. When we first started talking about the show, probably, I think I might have made the comment that I've always had kind of a private faith. Mm-hmm. And then here recently, it's been probably a little bit more outward faith because people ask me about things and we talk about things. But at the same time, I'm starting to get tugged back towards some things are cool to just keep between you and God.
Right.
I mean, there is sort of that. And as I'm reading through Mark, I mean, I lost count of how many times Jesus said not to tell anybody something. I mean, you've mentioned it on the show a few times, but as I'm going through Mark, I don't know if you counted them all up, if that is the book it happens the most in or if I'm just noticing it now. But I feel like every story, every miracle... He finishes off with,
keep it on the level.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So I've kind of wondered and asked, why is that? And I'm sure there's a lot of reasons for it, but I think I'll hand the baton to you and let you go first on the answer.
I think there's a couple reasons that Jesus never comes out and just says, all right, now, go tell it on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is one of those things that, number one is, again, Jesus was not looking for just a follower for the tricks or the miracles. You know, he had 5,000 following him, and that was just 5,000 men he fed. It could have been, most scholars put it, about 10,000 that he fed. And he had crowds just, you know, clamoring after him. And he point blank said, no, he upped the ante when he saw people following him just for that. And that's when he said, well, if you don't eat my flesh and drink of my blood, then you're not going to be. You're not going to taste of the kingdom. And that just threw everybody into a tizzy of, okay, these teachings are too hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of those things of, again, I don't think he's looking for fans.
Right.
As much as he is, maybe he's looking for disciples and followers. And I think there's a big difference there. And I think also there's a couple of times when he is more concerned about the witnesser or the witness than just as much as he is who he's being testified about. Does that make sense? What I mean by that is, if you oftentimes you'll see the demons, if he's casting out a demon, they'll come out and say, what do you have to do with us, Son of the Most High God?
Mm-hmm.
Well, golly, that's it. They recognize who he is.
Yeah.
But he's not interested in just anybody testifying for him. So,
yeah.
Hey, that's when he most times says, all right, shut up, you know, quiet some down. And then, and so it's one of, I think it goes back to, though, more having to do with a follower versus a fan, so to speak.
Well, and I think that gets into some of what I said last week, that there were some things about Jesus I was starting to notice that I might wait and read a little bit more before I really commented on. It kind of speaks to that a little bit, but still not to the point where I like have a whole, you know, segment ready to talk about all my things I'm noticing. But he seems to be much more of a doer than a talker.
Well, I think especially in the book of Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, if you'll notice,
and
Mark,
I will Mark say, let me interrupt to correct my stupidity. Yeah. Yes, I do know about the sermons and the teachings and the large crowds. I do know those.
Well,
but,
like Matthew, he seems more of a teacher because, again, I think you have to consider for all the gospels, each one of those writers had a particular audience in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew is always towards the Hebrew audience because he's always talking, this fulfills this. And this.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are people who are familiar with the Old Testament. And so when you have a Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, that's basically a one sermon that's three chapters long.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, he's more concerned about talking. Mark, Peter was the one who was basically reciting to him, this is what happened, this is what happened. And you know, Peter's one of those that he's just a stated as it is guy, let's get it done. And I think that's why you see that, because Mark hits the ground running. Mm-hmm. There's no angels, there's no shepherds, there's no announcements to Zechariah, there's no John the Baptist much. It is just boom, they're grown up, John the Baptist and Jesus, and here we go. We hit the ground. And there's very little commentary. Very little, he doesn't put much of his own spin on it. He writes the story.
Yeah. And it's been interesting that I think that's kind of where I wonder about the not sharing and not wanting large crowds. And not, I mean, a mob of people hinders the performance of what he's trying to do, what he came to do. He's, I mean, it doesn't, he can't work around the crowds, but at the same time, it, in Mark at least, it seems very more businesslike. Like, I came here to do a job, and let's do that job. I mean, well, maybe a little bit more that
and
way.
And you have Mark 10:45, which is one of his, if you would, it's his statement for why he came. You know, you have companies, and they have logos, and they have their sayings of what it is, their purpose statement, so to speak. And lo and behold, this is Jesus' purpose statement, Mark 10:45. I didn't come to be served, but to serve, and to give my life as a ransom for the many. So that's the sole reason he came. And just a little side note, we're going to be filming on our Facebook and YouTube, everything else. We got the 5 days before Christmas, so 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and on Christmas Day, I'm going to do 5 reasons Christ came. That's one of them. There's about 60 that I counted, but there, that's number one with a bullet. That one, and then Luke 19:10 too. So we're gonna have a good time with that.
So right on, just about on schedule. Mark 10:45 was one of the ones that I'd made a note of.
Right
from it, I wrote it down wrong in my haste. I had 10:25, so I was confused when I was looking at it.
Well, 10:45, I consider to be. Honestly, and I don't know, there's many other scholars that would say something different. I consider that to be the theme verse of Mark. I mean, it tells you why he came, what he was there to do. And like I said, Mark is one of those, and then. It's just, he is not, I think that's a very astute observation. It's business-like, boom, and boom, and boom. You know, but bullet point, here's what he did.
Well, here was my note for Mark 10:45 is that I said on schedule, this is way ahead of schedule because this would have been a better closer.
You got the edit button.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. I'll just rearrange it.
Pace, move.
If I would say, if you're looking to, you know, for someone posing the question that I did yet last week, you know, I want to act more like Jesus. What does that look like? 10:45 summerizes that. If you want to know what it means to act like Jesus, serve.
That's a good way. That's right. I've said it numerous times in a sermon. Whenever I mention 10:45, you are never more like Jesus than when you serve. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's if you want to be like Christ, be a servant, and even being a leader is being a servant leader. You know, you're not bossing folks around. You're not the head man that tells everybody and just a bully. No, a pastor should be. Or anybody else, I look for them to be a servant leader because that goes so much further.
Well, servant leader, I hadn't really thought about leadership. That's a good word that kind of, I see, there's maybe been some things that I've been trying to find a word for, and leadership's probably one of them.
Right.
That's probably the right word because leading by example is maybe specific way I'm taking that. But nobody... Even stepping away and thinking about the other 167 for a minute, and our other 167, people don't like the boss that tells you what to do and then sits back and does nothing.
Yeah.
They don't like the boss that just runs their mouth about all the stuff they're going to do, but then they do it or maybe they don't.
Yep.
All of the qualities that Jesus demonstrates, we as humans tend to think are desirable qualities,
right?
And then we just overcomplicate it from there. People appreciate when we see people in positions of power, authority, act with humility and service to others. Yeah. I mean, we applaud it and we put it on the news and it's all this stuff when a CEO does it, right?
Yeah.
These people that go, this time of year you see the CEOs at the shelters and the volunteer, they're doing all this stuff. And I'm not saying that in a condemning kind of way towards those people, just that we celebrate those things.
Right.
But he was the ultimate example of it in that was... He was the highest power that you could possibly be and lowered himself as low as you could possibly go.
Yeah.
In terms of...
To be born in a manger instead of at least a decent hotel. to basically grow up poor. He had nothing. When he died, the only thing he had was the clothes on his back. And the soldiers gambled for that. So, and he came from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. I think one of the things too that I love about Christ is, he demonstrated it to his disciples when he put a towel around his waist and he washed their feet. I mean, that's the lowest of lows that you can be. That was the servant's mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. And he said, "This I've done to give you an example." And so, we are to be servants, of no matter who we are. And mm-hmm. I think it's one I always loved, and I don't know, the restaurant's kind of, I think I may have used this before, but we Dave Thomas, who was the founder of Wendy's, had mm-hmm. a great philosophy that he tried to train his workers to have. And he said, I had an MBA, all right, not a master's of business administration. MBA is mop bucket attitude, meaning I would be willing to take a mop bucket and clean my restaurant if I got to. I'm not too big to do that, being that, hey, I'm even though I own the joint and own the whole chain, I still need to have that mop bucket attitude.
Well, and maybe that's where I was starting to go before my ADD kicked in there.
That's what I was sensing.
Yeah, you got it, yeah. It's not just that they're good qualities that other people like them. This is exactly where I was going with it. There are some really good positive consequences, effects, whatever you want to call it, of acting like Jesus, in the sense that, okay, being quick to listen and slow to speak.
Yeah.
Tremendous value in that I've learned, all kidding aside.
Yes.
Because people talk about you don't learn anything when you're talking. Mm-hmm. You really don't.
Mm.
But then also in the leadership qualities and the leading by example and rolling your sleeves up and getting dirty, I mean, that's a good quality for us to have, because business leaders tend to know how to do that. The successful business leaders typically know their businesses inside and out. They got their hands dirty on it. They know how to mop the floor, do whatever. Because you have to, to be successful. So there are so many qualities like that, that when you look at it, you go, huh, that's why he did that. That makes a lot of sense,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I mean, I'm only really, you know, as far as really diving into it, as far as I can, only halfway through Mark. And it's just amazing how many simple little everyday, there's a lot of examples that he gives.
Yeah.
For that. Mark 7:15, I thought was really cool.
All right. Well, if you want to look at Mark 7, again, I think if you really stop and think about it, you know, if you listen to the first few shows and all the way through our first couple of shows, we've been talking about legalism versus relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really kind of what's going on in chapter 7. The followers of the law are saying, well, Jesus, why didn't you do all this and do all that? And why didn't they wash their hands? And why didn't they do it? I mean, if you read the book of Mark, the Pharisees are all on him. And the scribes and the Sadducees, too, they're all on him. Every time they turn around, he's done something, or he's got them all tizzied up for some reason. And here it is, again, they did the same thing. And so when he gets to 15, he says, there's nothing outside the man which can defile him if it goes into him. Basically, he's saying, look, this relationship with Christ is not about, and again, let me make sure we hear this right. It's not about the right foods that you eat or doing the right amount of eating or doing this, this, and this. Now, I submit for your consideration that if your body is a temple, you kind of want to take care of it. I say that kind of reluctantly, because I know I don't take the best care, because I enjoy a good hot dog or 12 or 5 or whatever, anytime I can get them. And at the same time, I'm not going to go full, you know, I don't know what, the paleo or full this, that, and the other, where I'm not eating anything. But at the same time, I believe it's one of, there's a balance there of eating smart. I had a great friend. He lost, I know, close to about 50 pounds, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And when I saw him, I said, dude, what did you do? You know, I figured, this guy must have done a surgery or something. He this is what he said. He said, man, I went to every meal and approached it as a worship service. And so he said, I didn't want to eat too little. I didn't want to eat too much. I just ate the right amount. And he said, and for me, that turned out, he ended up losing 50 pounds. Now, I sat there and I was like, man, that's a pretty good way of doing it. He said, I went after it as, I want to eat my meals as unto the Lord. Okay, well, that's a pretty good way of doing it. And I think what Jesus is getting at here is, you are not made more holy if you eat certain foods or you eat these festival foods at the festival times. No, that's not what he's getting at here. What we are made holy by the blood of Christ. We're made holy by the Holy Spirit. And so that's again, it goes back to that religion versus relationship thing.
It does. And I think that when you get to 7:15, what he says, nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them.
Right.
Kind of a little bit back to, which by the way, I may start adding a correction segment of the show where I can go back and mistake corrections myself. Usually, there's about 4 or 5 times in the editing process I think, I shouldn't have said that. Why did I do that?
We needed both. I've done that time of 12.
Yeah.
Gosh.
See, if I still, if what you hear still needs editing, that's on me because I had a chance.
Well, I for one, and I cringe every time I'll say something like, well, that's 1 Corinthians. And then I'll mess up and I'll throw a chapter in there. And I'm like, no, that's not 12, it's 11. Dummy. Let me see if I can, I think I can paraphrase 7:15 better than I can with it's okay. Pretty easy.
All right.
It's not about what goes in your stomach. It's about what comes out of your heart.
Okay. Can we get fun with it a little bit and say what goes into your stomach can mean a lot of different things besides just the food? Or is this being, is this a pretty specific?
I think so. I think if you look at it though, when and I just want to make sure I'm in the right, because they were eating with impure, they hadn't washed their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. The worst thing ever. And, These scribes, Pharisees, and the teachers of the law saw that they weren't washing with their hands the way they should, because what you would do is you would take and you would do it a certain different ways to make sure that you had clean hands when you were about to eat. And so Jesus is saying, look, man, and they're saying because they didn't do that, okay, they're not walking with God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus is saying, no, it's not so much about the way you eat or what you eat. You know, if you go to the book of Colossians, Paul's going to kind of say the same thing. The church at Colossae was being attacked by a form of teaching called Gnosticism, but there was also some kind of aesthetic, or you had to do certain things, rituals, in order to be godly, mm-hmm. You know. And Paul says, no, it's not about what you're eating or what you're drinking, but it's about what's right in your heart.
Yeah. I'm going to take my stab at it.
Okay.
If it's wrong, it's just wrong. It's fine. It's part of the fun.
Hey, man.
It's getting probably deeper than it was intended here, but if you see situations, and I'm seeing a lot of them right now.
Okay.
Not a lot. Seeing a few. Where people are just having to deal with just things that you wish you didn't have to deal with. Just
okay.
Tough times. Things that just, you know what? It's easy to say it's not fair. It's easy to say this isn't, you know, this is just, and sometimes situations where, hate to say it, evil's at work. I'm not saying that the people involved in doing the different things and all that's always necessarily evil, but evil's at work to an extent. Now, here's my correction from last
week.
Dark
world.
Yeah. When I said last week, what I said about the devil, his sole purpose of existence being to
right.
I did put into my notes, yes, the devil does hate you, but that doesn't make you special.
Right.
That's, I think, maybe summarized that segment there.
Right.
You said, no, he does hate you. He's everything. And it, you know, but that's not what...
Yeah,
don't make yourself the star of that show either.
Yeah, he's got a bigger enemy than you.
But the evil that's in work in your life, and you're going to have evil that's going to be in the way, there's distractions, there's things, whatever that are going to be there.
Right.
They can't defile you. It's how you handle and how you react and what you come back, how you handle the adversity is what can defile you.
Right.
So I'm going way out there on the analogy limb there, but if you take it a little bit further, ultimately the outside world doesn't control your relationship with God unless you
right.
let it.
Well, I think it's one thing of, let me see if I can put it another way. Jesus talks about joy, and he says, I give joy. The world can't give it, and the world can't take it away from you.
All right? Mm-hmm.
So if the world can't take it away from me, then either I have to let it be robbed from me, or I let go of it, because the world can't take it away from you. And I think you're exactly right. Just because we have difficult times, difficult situations, struggles, man, you talk about it. In this world, you will have trouble. And just because we have those does not mean that that's going to take us away from the Lord. If you think about what 1 Peter 1:7 says, is that these trials and tribulations we have is really to refine us and make us more like Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, those struggles shouldn't take us away from the Lord, shouldn't defile us, but at the same time should be used. And I think it's always those things come in our life. We have a choice to make. We can either grow bitter or we can get better.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice is yours.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, look, sometimes I'll be honest with you, there are some very, very difficult situations people face. You know, I think of a loss of a child. I think of loss of job, home, loss of a family. Sometimes it's of our own doing. Sometimes, man, it really wasn't our own doing. It
mm-hmm.
just came out of the blue, man. I've seen it in so many families played out that you're like, man, they went through that, and now comes the test of, all right, are you going to trust that God's still faithful?
There was a line of a song. We hadn't done music in a while. We hadn't talked about songs in a while. This is I don't think we have.
Maybe that's a staff meeting.
Yeah. There was a song that I listened to several years ago. I love the song because I love it because it's lyrically really like almost not dark, but right. It's deep and it's serious and it's sad, it's somber. But the song itself is very upbeat and catchy, so it's right. Like it's kind of unique.
What song is this?
It's called "True Sadness" by the Avett Brothers.
I know that one.
Do you know the Avett Brothers?
Don't know them either.
They are an interesting. You talk about an interesting band. Now, they're in North Carolina. They're a North Carolina band. They're from the Charlotte area, and one of their one of the brothers in the band was an ECU alum, so it's one of the local here.
It makes them good.
Their dad's a Methodist minister, so they've got, there's a lot of God in their songs.
What are they like, Switchfoot?
Just all over the place. They've got a really cool video on YouTube of them playing A Closer Walk with Thee, and their dog, like, the singer is trying to play it on piano, and his 3-year-old daughter's, like, trying to climb all over him and get him to stop. It's right. Hilarious. Great video, worth watching, just to see him fighting with it. But anyway, point of the song, there's a song called "True Sadness," and at the end, there's a line that says, "Just know the kingdom of God is within you, even though the battle is bound to continue."
Right.
And
I like that.
That's one of those that can be, it's a good line in tough times to understand that, yeah, the battle, as we said, the spiritual battle, that goes on. But I do think it's difficult in those times to keep your heart focused on not doing what I talked about in the last show. I mean,
it is.
Which, by the way, I figured out how to button up an hour and 9 minutes into what God really wanted me to admit on the show. What he wanted me to admit is that I rushed. He wanted me to admit that I rushed the situation because I didn't have faith in him to handle it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to take any time to think about it anymore. Let's just go ahead and knock this on out.
Let's just
hurry
do it.
Up. Yep. And not a lot of faith being shown there. I think
so
that was his
ready,
biggest.
Fire, aim.
Yeah, maybe fire, aim, ready.
Yeah,
I don't know if I bothered with that. But anyway, so
I do like that line though. The battle continues.
The battle continues, and that doesn't mean that God's not there. It's the opposite. He literally says, "Just know the kingdom of God is within you, even as the battle continues."
Right.
You are going to still face those things, but it's what I took from the 7:15 was just trying to keep your heart pure in what comes out of you, what comes out of your mouth, your actions, the way you treat people. You don't have to react to those things. Yeah. We often do, but you don't have
to. It's more about your heart than it is your stomach, because it's from the heart that the mouth speaks, and really it's from the heart, the emotion, the will, that inner person is where we act from, and if that's surrendered to. Okay, Nate said he hadn't heard them.
I will find you a top five list.
A cool band.
Yeah. Tell him if he likes Ray Wiley, it's worth a listen. I'll try to think through a top four. See, they've been. I've listened to them for so long. I'd have to think really of all time. What are my top five?
That's what I'll tell them. If you like Ray Wiley, they're worth listening to. but that's what Jesus is getting at in that verse. And I think it's one of, always keep in mind that, for all of this, it always goes back to a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the heart of the matter is the matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
If we struggle, if we struggle with worry, if we struggle with anxiety, if we struggle with anger, if we struggle with bitterness, if we struggle with, and really, you get it on out to any other struggles we have, whether it's physical, whether it's drugs or anything else, it always goes back to it's a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your heart's right with the Lord, okay, now I won't be responding in that, and he can help us to deal with that anger and bitterness and making it right with people. So again, it is a matter of the heart and just making sure. Now, here's what's bad, is Jeremiah says that our heart is deceptively wicked above all things. And so we need to know that our heart can, we can sometimes fool ourselves into thinking, okay, well, if it's a matter of the heart, my heart's good.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's deceptively wicked. It'll tell you you're fine. Mm-hmm. It'll even tell you, no, you ain't mad at that person. Or yeah, you may be mad at that person, but it's justified. Or it's okay to hold on to that anger. And we'll tend to put it down as saying, it's not that bad. And that's where we get ourselves in trouble, because we need to make sure, again, like we said a couple weeks ago, is keeping that short sin list, mm-hmm. making sure that, hey, there be no way, what David says, search my heart, make sure there's no wayward way in me.
And you do have to search your heart to find those. Yeah. And do
and
it
you
with
need
him.
The Lord to search your heart.
Right, that's really, yeah. You and that's what I was kind of trying to get that boxed in the right way there. Yeah, because you need to search the heart. You need to let him search it because you won't find it.
Me searching my heart is going to be, oh, I see that. No, I don't see that. And you turn your head and you didn't even see that big old
That's sums up kind of what, you know, a few years ago I was talking about on the last show a little bit for me is, you know, it's real, real easy to just kind of, you know, just.
Yeah.
Just,
oh yeah. We are experts at either justifying, ignoring, or somehow another making it right.
Yeah.
That it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Ignoring it's a really good coping mechanism. That's a great one.
I think that's our best.
That's the best way to say, I'm not mad about anything.
Yeah.
I'm mad about nothing. I hadn't thought about it.
You're just as angry as you can be.
Yeah. Not thinking about it is not forgiving.
No, knowing that, it only takes about one little thing to really set you off.
Yeah.
Mm. Indeed.
So, this was on the, of all my notes, this was one I did want to get into. As we were sitting here kind of, and I was crossing through which ones, this is what I wanted to talk about, and it kind of came up there really well. So you've used the line or the phrase, you know, spiritually sober, alert, a lot on the show in different ways, and maybe even some others. Around these parts, I imagine that a lot of times we're going to take that spiritually sober part and turn it into don't drink, don't do drugs, don't do things that are going to mess you up. And now, hey, that's a part of what you're saying. Ain't no question about that.
There's a piece of that.
Right. But I started thinking about it a little bit, I was like, well, that's actually a lot of an analogy that you can take from that to what he, I think, means in real life, too. Thinking back to kind of what I said last week, and it didn't feel like anything was, you know, all these times I feel like I'm in a good spot, or all these ones I'm about to mess up.
Right.
Well, thinking about that process of how you mess it up from there, all my friends ask me this. Whatever episode this is, we've never talked about alcohol, and all my friends are amazed I haven't brought up alcohol to show you. It's like, well, you know, it just hadn't come up. But the process of, I can speak from experience, I won't ask you to, but the process of becoming intoxicated is a lot like the process of becoming spiritually sloppy and drunk and lazy and all these things. It doesn't hit you at once.
Right.
It's one sip, it's one beer, it's two beers, it's, okay, maybe three this time.
Three sheets.
Yeah, and next thing you know, you don't remember what just happened, okay? Yeah. And I was at a, after we finished the show and I finished editing, I can kind of put a pin in that conversation. I think I've got that. I got to what that was about, I think. But there's a whole lot more to it from the, what do we learn from moving forward?
Right.
And I thought about that spiritually sober and alert. I've thought about it every time you've said it. I like that metaphor and I've gotten it. It's connected me, but I haven't really connected it to the literal. It's a lot like that. If you're now sure you go like just take a big old bottle and down it. That's a little bit different process. But most people don't do that. Usually it's a little sip here, a little sip there, and next thing you know, or you know, it's one day here, one day there. Next thing you know, it's a month, and it's a lifestyle. It's a process that doesn't happen just right at one time, spiritually, literally, and any other thing in your life. And I don't know if there's a question in any of that, other than just
no. I think there's what you're saying is exactly right, and what Peter uses in 1 Peter 5 when he says, "Be sober, be on the alert, for your enemy, the devil, walks around like a prowling lion." Roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I think one of the things that Greek term there is, it is equivalent to or akin to either drugs or alcohol. The way that he wrote it is, okay, don't let a spiritual intoxicant don't participate in it. And it doesn't have to be drugs or alcohol. It can be anything that takes you away from your spiritual attention, from your spiritual focus. And you're exactly right. It does happen just a little bit over time. It's not a you know, instantaneous type thing, although I guess it could be. But most of the time it is a small little things like that. And it could be a TV show. It could be something that you're spending more and more time doing this rather than focusing on. And then what happens is you tend to let your guard down, you tend to be focused over here, and lo and behold, that's when we trip, that's when we fall up.
Yeah, and you know, this week I've experienced maybe a little bit of that to an extent, and there might be some things that I was doing to relax a little bit, to rest a little bit, some things that maybe they were lazy, idle, whatever, they weren't anything necessarily that productive, but it was kind of letting my brain rest a little bit. Right. Anybody would say, oh, that's a sin, why'd you do that? But after I did it for long enough, I was playing PlayStation. Call it what it is. That one ain't that. I ain't gonna be that guarded about that. I was playing PlayStation a lot this weekend. After a while, God just thought, "You played enough. I mean, surely you've got something better to do.
Like go read the Bible, go pray, go do something. Spend a little time with me.
So it's not always about, you know. I don't think God doesn't want us to have any fun or anything. But at the same time, it's like, don't just waste your whole life. Well, there's some stuff to do that is, if you don't have anything else to do.
Well, I think it goes back to God's not saying thou shalt not ever have the PlayStation out. Thou shalt not ever watch a ball game. No, I think it's one of, I think God put us on this earth. I think we enjoy, because I think Jesus, in a way, enjoyed. I mean, hey, look at who he hung out with. I don't think he went around as a sad sack all the time.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think he knew there was times to be serious. I think he knew there were times that I think it goes back to what's most important. Mm-hmm. And for him, it was the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And for him, it was being obedient to the Father. And I think the same thing for us is there's nothing wrong with enjoying life, and there's nothing wrong with having some fun and laughing and carrying on. It's just that, all right, there comes a time when, all right, this, and that fine balance is oftentimes just like your relationship with the Lord. It comes from him, so that I know, all right, I don't need to be involved in all that. But here's what I do need to be focused on.
Well, and again, it also is a lot like your relationship with your kids in real life, too.
Yeah.
Because I had this conversation with Heather this morning. I showed you pictures from the game last night.
Yeah.
A really, really cool thing to take him to the game last night in Charlotte for the Hornets game. One of the firms been doing some work with, gave us some courtside tickets, which was...
I'm telling you, man.
He said to me, he's like, have you never been to these types of things? No. And he said, well, it's like a bucket list item. And it really was. It was cool.
I can see that.
But
I mean, that was something. I saw the picture, man.
There's a picture of one of the players standing around on the sideline, and his butts were like riding Gabe's face. Gabe was embarrassed by that picture. He didn't like that picture.
Yeah, I was about to say. I like that either.
I sent it to him. He said, you sent that to my mom? I said, of course I did.
Yeah.
Good. It's the first person I sent it to.
Yeah. but you were Spike Lee and Jay-Z and Jack Nicholson seats, man.
Yeah.
You're talking right front row.
That was awesome. And you can always tell that I'm out of place in those places. I didn't know where to go. I'm going up to the usher.
Yeah.
Gabe, so I get there, and I had to go to the restroom. I said, I got to go to the restroom. Gabe, you come with me? He said, no, I don't want to leave. It's like an hour before the game. He's just sitting there looking at
it. You don't want to leave.
And so I had to ask the usher. I said, do you mind just keeping an eye on him real quick? I mean, there weren't very many people down there. And that guy's in charge of taking care of keeping the players safe. I'm sure he can handle Gabe. But he didn't even want to leave. But anyway, I was talking to him this morning because in the process of that, and I would do it again tomorrow in a heartbeat, no regrets about it by any means, but his homework assignment was reading 14 pages. Kind of hard to do that in a car. He gets car sick. And then he kind of spaced it out, but we ran out of daylight, so he couldn't read on the way back. And we got home at 1 o'clock in the morning, so he wasn't really.
He's a bad morning. This morning, wasn't he?
Well, and I was not. I had work to do when I got home. I didn't get to bed at 3.
Right.
So, I mean, it was not a good morning. But me and Heather were kind of debriefing this morning on what went right, what went wrong. And I was basically got to the point in the conversation where I just kind of had to say, look, I messed up for a good cause, okay?
Yeah.
But she said, I understand that, but we still, you can have fun, but you still got to make sure you get your responsibilities done first and around that. And it's like, I get it. I dropped the ball. I'm sorry. But with my kids, I probably am a little bit too fun sometimes, but then I turn around and might be a little bit too hard in other ways. But you got to get your stuff done.
Yeah.
But he's okay with having fun, too, when you got your stuff done, but do what he's asking you to do first. And
It doesn't always have to be something fun, but at the same time, there's a fine balance of, okay.
God, I think, has a decent, I think he can control your, he understands your endurance. He's plugged into you to know when you need a break.
Right.
He's plugged in when he knows you've got some capacity, you can step on the gas a little bit here. I think you just got to be listening to that, too, and make sure that you're not spending a little bit too much time on break.
Or a little too much on gas.
Yeah.
I think it's one of, I think that's where you trust in God's grace. When there's so much on you, his grace is sufficient to get us through. But also there are times Jesus pulled aside and pulled away and went into the wilderness to pray just to get alone.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that. And that's one that I oftentimes have to remind myself of is, hey, if Christ needed those times to refresh and refocus, you probably do too, if not more.
Yeah. This is shifting topics, I guess, a lot, but I've got a few verses here from Mark that a lot of times I come in, I think I heard this. I'll be honest with you, these, I just want you to tell me what they mean.
Okay. All right, I hope I can. We'll see.
One of them I get, this is an old one, 10:23-31.
Okay.
Rich man, walking through the needle.
Yeah.
We've talked about on the show, sometimes God does bless people with money.
Mm-hmm.
That one seems to be basically a condemnation that says if he blesses you with it, you better get rid of it before you die. I don't know if that's the literal interpretation. I want to see if there was more to it than that.
Let's do a little bit of the context. A rich young ruler comes to Jesus and wants to know what must I do to inherit the kingdom? What must I do to be saved? And Jesus, man, he's not very kind when this guy says, all right, give away all you got and come follow me. And oh my goodness, you know, it's that was a shock, one, to the guy, and number two, to the audience. Here's why it was a shock to the man is, wait a minute, so now he's face to face with, what do I love most?
Mm-hmm.
Do I love stuff and money more than I do Christ? And I think that's really what the gist of that is. So don't read into, oh, we can't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's saying that if your life is consumed with or all is consumed with or all you care about is money and stuff, yeah, you're missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the reason the audience and everybody around was so shocked is it was considered, just like you said, well, if God's blessed you with riches, you are shoe-in for the heaven. Because if he's blessed you on this side, you got your ticket.
Was that the way of thinking back then?
Oh,
you had a bunch of stuff, and that must have been real.
That's exactly the way it is. That's why they're kind of like, whoa, that ain't... Because if God's already blessed you here, shoe-in. You know, go ahead and give him the trophy. And that was really what it was thinking. And that's why Jesus says, no, it's not about the stuff that you own. And it's easier for a rich man to go through the eye of the needle than to enter the kingdom of heaven. He's not saying it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
He's just saying your riches ain't going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the part that I think that mainstream common sense interpretation of that would say, no, that's impossible.
Right.
You can't get a camel through the eye of a needle. That's, I don't want to take my chances on that.
Now there are some that will define it as, well, there was a wall inside the city wall. There was a gate called the Eye of the Needle, which was a little bit bigger. And would it be big enough for a camel to get down on his knees and basically crawl through? Okay, I'll give you that. I don't care if it's the eye of the needle.
I've heard that before. I was wondering if you would bring if that was something.
I don't care if you want to define it as the eye of the needle being a literal needle or that. What I'm saying is your riches are not going to get you into heaven. And I think that's what, again, life is so much more than what you own.
Yeah. That definitely was I think the purpose of bringing that one up maybe is that you get into these, you hear people that take just the literal verse exactly the way it is and they draw whatever conclusion they want to draw from it there. And that one's one that I can read the context and kind of get to the point of it a little bit more. The only thing I've ever found on that one was what you said about the gist of it, certainly you get.
Yeah, I don't care which way you want to find the eye of the needle. I think you gotta go down to the lower verses though, or the back end verses. Because, I mean, when he says, it's easier for the camel to go through the eye of the needle, it says, well, then who can be saved? I mean, the disciples asked that because we already knew. It's a shoe-in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he says, well, wait a second. Yeah, with man it's impossible, but with God salvation is possible. Mm-hmm. So therefore, our only hope, our only means of salvation, our only way of salvation has to come from God, and that came through Christ.
Yeah.
So that's really, I think the whole gist of that verse or what you really want to look at is verse 27. For all things are possible with God. As far as how can people be saved, it's not by what you own or what you have, it's by who you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Christ.
Yeah. It's surrendering to that to be that ultimate centerpiece and only piece in your life, right? Seeking first his kingdom. You can't seek first his kingdom if you've put your riches.
What's your number one priority?
Right.
And look, again, he's not knocking having stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if God blesses you with it, He expects you to use it. That's the key.
Right. I've got two more from here. One in particular I thought was just an interesting observation. I don't know what it means or if it means anything. But so starting at 22, have faith in God, Jesus answered, truly I tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in their heart, believes it will happen, that's not the part that I'm getting at. We've covered that one. But at 24, He says, therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. Past tense is the point that I'm making there. Received, past tense. Yeah. And that's not to bring back up the Denzel thing. I don't think that that's tied to what I asked last week about Denzel. But it was, I'll tell you what it was tied to. There's a note in my phone that I haven't gotten to bring it up yet. It was not because of anything necessarily in particular that's happened lately, but there are a lot of scenarios that you can imagine in life where you pray for something and it's already been sent. It may not have gotten to you yet, but it's en route. Right. And there will be some times that if you really think back at your life, things that you prayed for that God had already, you even said this, I think on the show, that if I look back at it and thought about it enough, you know, 5 years ago, God was working. I just didn't see it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he was.
He knew we'd be here.
Yeah. And now I see that.
I think what you're getting at there, though, it is by faith that we ask.
And, by faith that we ask, and then when it gets to the know that you have received it, that is the, is it talking to that? The fact that he may have already, like, it's if it's in his, he could have already sent it, and you just don't know about it yet.
I think it's one of, faith says it's as good as done. If God, and I think herein lies the whole rub of this thing is, if I know God said it,
it's done.
Then I'm good with it.
Yeah,
and that's right. And you're going to see that in Mary, Zacharias, as we look at it this week. They're speaking in past tense.
Mm-hmm.
God sent his salvation. Well, no, he hadn't been born yet. No, he has already done it because he said it back in Genesis. And so it's one of knowing that if God said it and God's doing this, I'm going to go ahead and count it as done. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to go ahead and write the check tomorrow for whatever. But I'm trusting the Lord that he's going to take care of it.
Yeah.
And
it's just that definitiveness. It's that resolve in your heart when you pray for something. Knowing
that that is, again, ask anything in my name. Mm-hmm. And I think therein lies the rub, again, is, okay, I'm making sure I'm praying in accordance to God's will.
Right.
Not just what I want, but, okay, Lord. And I'm doing that for you and I, some things you and I have talked about,
mm-hmm.
doing that personally, that I every time I get around you, I want to ask you, well, how's this? Because I know it's coming.
Well, and I feel the same way about it right now. I feel like it's I know it's coming kind of thing. And we were talking about it before we recorded. I mean, of the things that I've worked on, I mean, this is coming with the path of least, this is coming with the least resistance. I'm making it, making progress faster in these conversations I had before. And I feel, but as I've done that, I don't have a lot of anxiety about it at all. I'm kind of like you. I'm waiting on it, and I know a bunch of people that are waiting on it too.
And that's one of the things I've been praying for too is for you not to be anxious during this time, but instead when it comes, because I'm already kind of like that verse. I know it's coming. I'm as good as done.
Yeah, I feel that way not just about that particular thing, but I think in the last few weeks I've started to feel that's symbolic of everything and much bigger than one individual thing and everything you do in life.
It's but trust.
It's trust.
Yep.
One last verse that I had a question on, I kind of forgot about it a minute ago. This was the one I was actually the most, I didn't get this one at all.
All right.
9, 49, and 50.
We're going to go, all right, 9, 49, and 50.
Yeah, everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again? Again, the context of this, I had already made a note from church on Sunday. Yeah, unrelated. So I was distracted in church and wrote in my notes.
Good gracious.
Unrelated, go through the parable that says cut off your tongue. So
that
happened to be in Mark, and I covered it last night. So the part where he when I said on the show, when I started the show, it's better for me to just shut up and listen and I stay out of trouble. I have actually been kind of exercising that a little bit and saying, when in doubt, don't do anything and you're better off, you know?
But I don't know if you know, there's some people, I think your spiritual gift is making people uncomfortable with your silence. Have you ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it numerous times. They'll just sit there, and next thing you know, you're wanting to talk because of it. And so I've always said that's their spiritual gift, man. They can make you feel awkward just by sitting there being quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I love this passage when you're looking for everyone. Salt is good, but if salt becomes unsaltiness, with what will it make you salty again? Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. What the text is or the context here is, John and some others saw some other disciples trying to cast out demons, and they were like, you know, what do you want us to do about that? And Jesus is basically saying, don't stand in their way. They're they're following me, you know. Don't have this competition as us versus them if you're on the same team. Mm-hmm. It's all us. But I think he also is getting back to the point of, I think he's attacking, again, going back to the matter of the heart. You know, for John to ask that, that was kind of a, I don't want to say a petty rivalry, but hey, wait a minute. We're the ones who have the monopoly on this. We got mm-hmm. the man right here in our corner. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is saying, no, don't hinder them. And I don't know if he's addressing that part of don't have that pettiness. But then he goes on and he begins to talk about, you know, to the extent of, it's about living a holy life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jesus is wants us to do. That's his will for our life, is that we would be sanctified, that we would be more like Christ, that we might not ever be sinless, but we will sin less. And I think it's what he's getting at there is we need to be battling it to the point of we're not going, you know, this is, you read that, and that's pretty drastic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think that's what Jesus is getting at, is this is a battle that, hey, sometimes it's going to require some drastic means.
I do think there was another reason that I made a note in my book about that, because that was maybe more tied to work a little bit. I've noticed a theme when I do stuff with work a lot. I'm talking a lot on these shows and podcasts and stuff about how much people in this industry throw mud at each other and fight amongst themselves and try to prove the other one's wrong and wrong and wrong. And just trying to flip that inside out and say, why don't we just tell people what we're really doing,
right,
and not argue and do all that kind of stuff. So maybe that was kind of, and it also goes back to, you know, a house divided against itself cannot stand, kind of backs that up too a little bit.
Right.
As I've been starting to look for more specific examples of maybe what God might have in mind for ways that I can incorporate that 167 into my day job kind of thing, you
right.
know, and like, what are some things that just some good principles to try to make sure I'm following pretty regularly on how we're doing things. And that was one of them, is that I like that central theme of just, can we just all get along a little bit better?
Yeah.
Quit trying to make it about who's right and who's wrong. We're all
possible.
Wrong in a way. I mean, you know, it's just like, let's just,
if at all possible, be at peace with all men. That's what Romans says.
There you go.
And that's what he says at the end, and be peace with one another.
Does it say before that, if at all possible?
Well, that's Romans does that. Paul does that in Romans. He says, if at all possible, be at peace with all men. Because Paul knows, man, there's some folks out there that you ain't going to be at peace with. But he says, to every extent that is within your being, your ability, your power, you make it right.
Yeah.
And even if that guy says, I don't want to be at peace with you, you've done. You can lay your head at night knowing, I've done everything I can to make it right.
Yeah.
Now, Jesus right here says, and be at peace with one another.
Yeah. We've got 2 minutes left, so but it is actually kind of good, because next week would probably be probably more fitting time to do this anyway. From church on Sunday, there was a point you made about Mary's humility.
Mm.
And I thought about this. I thought, you know what? She didn't really claim any of the credit for her role in this, ever. Never once did she talk about, I mean, she is, and I put down here, she is an all-star of all-stars, to the point that when you give the sermon, you have to say, now let's be clear, we can't pray to her, it's not that.
Her.
But she's about as close as you can get on this side.
She is
that.
A model of what
But she
what
makes
it
means. No claim anywhere to anything that I have seen that she did well, or she did good,
no,
or she did
about her. Because I think she knows there's thousands of other Jewish girls that God could have chosen. He chose mm-hmm. me, but it isn't because of anything I've done. It's by his grace and because of his plan.
Is there I don't want to definitively say this without picking through it, but is there a part in the Gospels where Mary expresses fear from the situation? We can imply that it was, we can infer that it was there, but
I think it's more or less implied, we would have to infer.
Oh, there's no question. She had to be fear. I'm sure she was. But I don't, there's not really.
Teenage girl, scared. Single.
I'm sure not aware of anything in the scripture where there's like a battle in her mind of like where she's angry about the whole thing. It's like, if anything, feels blessed from like the jump. So as we get closer to Christmas, I would like to maybe spend a little bit of time let's give Mary her due next week. Talk a little bit more about Mary. because you know what? She's the all-star of all-stars if there was one of us.
We'll start it off with, all right, we're not worshiping her.
But
we're not praying to her, but
I think she
deserves.
But I think the point of it, her humility.
Yeah.
You shouldn't want to worship her. She didn't want you to worship her. She
that's right. She would have not.
That's what I like to focus on. You can't find someone who played a bigger role.
Yeah.
She didn't act like it.
That's right.